turns to brown. This hair would never grow dark. Nikoleo sat in a carved wooden chair. Her feet did not quite touch the floor. A male vampire moved to lean on the chair arm. His skin was a strange shade of brownish ivory. He leaned over and whispered in Nikolaos's ear. She laughed, and it was the sound of chimes or bells. A lovely, calculated sound. Teresa went to the girl in the chair and stood behind it, hands trailing in the long, white blonde hair. A human male came to stand to the right of her chair, back against the wall, hands clasped at his side. He stared straight ahead, face blank, spine rigid. He was nearly perfectly bald, face narrow, eyes dark. Most men don't look good without hair. This one did. He was handsome but had the air of a man who didn't care much about that. I wanted to call him a soldier, though I didn't know why. Another man came to lean against Teresa. His hair was a sandy blonde, cut short. His face was strange, not good-looking, but not ugly. A face you would remember. A face that might become lovely if you looked at it long enough. His eyes were a pale, greenish color. He wasn't a vampire, but I might have been hasty calling him human. Jean-Claude came last to stand to the left of the chair. He touched no one, and even standing with them, he was apart from them. "Well," I said, "all we need is the theme from Dracula, Prince of Darkness, and we'll be all set." Her voice was like her laugh, high and harmless, planned innocence.
"You think you're funny, don't you?"
I shrugged. "It comes and goes." She smiled at me. No fang showed. She looked so human, eyes sparkling with humor, face rounded and pleasant. "See how harmless I am? Just a pretty child." "Right." The black vampire whispered in her ear again. She laughed so high and clear you could have bottled it. "Do you practice the laugh, or is it natural talent?"
"Nah, I'm betting you practice."
Jean-Claude's face twisted. I wasn't sure if he was trying not to laugh or not to frown. Maybe both. I affected some people that way. The laughter seeped out of her face, very human, until only her eyes sparkled. There was nothing funny about the look in those twinkling eyes. It was the sort of look that cats give small birds. Her voice lilted at the end of each word, a Shirley Temple affectation.
"You are either very brave or very stupid."
You really need at least one dimple to go with the voice. Jean-Claude said softly,
"I'm betting on stupid."
I glanced at him and then back at the ghoulie pack. What I am is tired, hurt, angry, and scared. I would very much like to get the show over with and get down to business.
"I am beginning to see why Aubrey lost his temper."
Her voice was dry, humorless. The lilting sing-song was dripping away like melting ice.
"Do you know how old I am?"
I stared at her and shook my head.
"I thought you said she was good, Jean-Claude."
She said his name like she was angry with him.
"She is good."
"Tell me how old I am."
Her voice was cold. An angry grown-up's voice. "I can't. I don't know why, but I can't."
"How old is Teresa?"
I stared at the dark-haired vampire, remembering the weight of her in my mind. She was laughing at me. 100, maybe 150. No more. Her face was unreadable, carved marble, as she asked,
"Why no more?"
"That's how old she feels."
"Feels?"
In my head, she feels a certain degree of power. I always hated to explain this part aloud. It always sounded mystical. It wasn't. I knew vampires the way some people knew horses or cars. It was a knack. It was practice. I didn't think Nikolaos would enjoy being compared to a horse or a car, so I kept my mouth shut. See? Not stupid after all.
"Look at me, human. Look into my eyes."
Her voice was still bland, with none of that commanding power that Jean-Claude had.
"Geez, look into my eyes? You'd think the city's master vampire could be more original."
But I didn't say it out loud. Her eyes were blue, or gray, or both. Her gaze was like a weight pressing against my skin. If I put my hands up, I almost expected to be able to push something away.
I had never felt any vampire's gaze like that. But I could meet her eyes. Somehow I knew that wasn't supposed to happen. The soldier standing to her right was looking at me, as if I'd finally done something interesting. Nikolaos stood. She moved a little in front of her entourage. She would only come to my collarbone, which made her short. She stood there for a moment, looking ethereal and lovely like a painting. No sense of life, but a thing of lovely lines and careful color. She stood there without moving and opened her mind to me. It felt like she had opened a door that had been locked. Her mind crashed against mine, and I staggered. Thoughts ripped into me like knives, steel-edged dreams. Fleeting bits of her mind danced in my head. Where they touched, I was numbed, hurt. I was on my knees, and I didn't remember falling. I was cold, so cold. There was nothing for me. I was an insignificant thing beside that mind. How could I think to call myself an equal? How could I do anything but crawl to her and beg to be forgiven? My insolence was intolerable. I began to crawl to her on hands and knees. It seemed like the right thing to do. I had to beg her forgiveness. I needed to be forgiven. How else did you approach a goddess but on bended knee? No. Something was wrong. But what? I should ask the goddess to forgive me. I should worship her, do anything she asked. No. 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 I whispered it. No.
Come to me, my child.
Her voice was like spring after a long winter. It opened me up inside. It made me feel warm and welcome. She held out pale arms to me. The goddess would let me embrace her. Wondrous. Why was I cowering on the floor? Why didn't I run to her? No. I slammed my hands into the stone. It stung, but not enough. No. I smashed my fist into the floor. My whole arm tingled and went numb. No! I pounded my fists into the rock over and over until they bled. Pain was sharp, real, mine. I screamed, "Get out of my mind, you bitch!" I crouched on the floor, panting, cradling my hands against my stomach. My pulse was jumping in my throat. I couldn't breathe past it. Anger washed through me, clean and sharp-edged. It chased the last shadow of Nikolaos's mind away. I glared up at her. Anger, and behind that, terror. Nikolaos had washed over my mind like the ocean in a seashell, filled me up and emptied me out. She might have to drive me crazy to break me, but she could do it if she wanted to, and there wasn't a damn thing I could do to protect myself. She stared down at me and laughed, that wondrous wind chime of a laugh.
Oh, we have found something the animator fears. Yes, we have.
Her voice was lilting and pleasant. A child bride again. Nikolaos knelt in front of me, sweeping the sky-blue dress under her knees, ladylike. She bent at the waist so she could look me in the eyes.
How old am I, animator?
I was starting to shake with reaction, shock. My teeth chattered like I was freezing to death, and maybe I was. My voice squeezed out between my teeth and the tight jerk of my jaw.
1,000,
I said. Maybe more.
You were right, Jean-Claude. She is good.
She pressed her face nearly into mine. I wanted to push her away, but more than anything, I didn't want her to touch me. She laughed again, high and wild, heart-rendingly pure. If I hadn't been hurting so badly, I might have cried or spit in her face.
Good, animator. We understand each other. You do what we want, or I will peel your mind away like the layers of an onion.
She breathed against my face, voice dropping to a whisper. A child's whisper with an edge of giggling to it.
You do believe I can do that, don't you?
I believed. Chapter 12. I wanted to spit in that smooth, pale face, but I was afraid of what she would do to me. A drop of sweat ran slowly down my face. I wanted to promise her anything, anything, if she would never touch me again. Nikolaos didn't have to bespell me. All she had had to do was terrify me. The fear would control me. It was what she was counting on. I could not let that happen. Get out of my face, I said. She laughed. Her breath was warm and smelled like peppermint. Breath mints. But underneath the clean, modern smell, very faint, was the scent of fresh blood. Old death. Recent murder. I wasn't shivering anymore. I said, "Your breath smells like blood." She jerked back, a hand going to her lips. It was such a human gesture that I laughed. Her dress brushed my face as she stood. One small, slippered foot kicked me in the chest. The force tumbled me backwards, sharp pain, no air. For the second time that night, I couldn't breathe. I lay flat on my stomach, gasping, swallowing past the pain. I hadn't heard anything break. Something should have broken. The voice thudded over me, hot enough to scald.
Get her out of here before I kill her myself.
The pain faded to a sharp ache. Air burned going down. My chest was tight like I'd swallowed lead.
Stay where you are, Jean.
Jean-Claude was standing away from the wall, halfway to me. Nikolaos commanded him to stillness with one small, pale hand.
Can you hear me, animator?
Yes. My voice was strangled. I couldn't get enough air to talk.
Did I break something?
Her voice rose upward like a small bird. I coughed, trying to clear my throat, but it hurt. I huddled around my chest while the ache faded. No.
Pity. But I suppose that would have slowed things down, or made you useless to us.
She seemed to think about the last, as if that had had possibilities. What would they have done to me if something had been broken? I didn't want to know.
The police are aware of only 4 vampire murders. There have been 6 more.
I breathed in carefully. Why not tell the police?
My dear animator, there are many among us who do not trust the human laws. We know how equal human justice is for the undead.
She smiled, and again there should have been a dimple.
Jean-Claude was the 5th most powerful vampire in this city. Now he is the 3rd.
I stared up at her, waiting for her to laugh, to say it was a joke. She continued to smile, the same exact smile like a piece of wax. Were they playing me for a fool? Something has killed 2 master vampires? Stronger than... I had to swallow before continuing. Jean-Claude? Her smile widened, flashing a distinct glimpse of Fang.
You do grasp the situation quickly. I will give you that. And perhaps that will make Jean-Claude's punishment less... severe. He recommended you to us, did you know that?
I shook my head and glanced at him. He had not moved, not even to breathe. Only his eyes looked at me. Dark blue like midnight skies, almost fever bright. He hadn't fed yet. Why wouldn't she let him feed? Why is he being punished?
Are you worried about him?
Her voice held a mockery of surprise.
My, my, my. Aren't you angry that he brought you into this?
I stared at him for a moment. I knew then what I saw in his eyes. It was fear. He was afraid of Nikolaos. And I knew if I had any ally in this room, it was him. Fear will bind you closer than love or hate, and it works a hell of a lot quicker. No, I said.
No, no!
She minced the word, crying it up and down, a child's imitation.
Fine.
Her voice was suddenly lower, grown up, shimmering with heat, angry.
We will give you a gift, animator. We have a witness to the 2nd murder. He saw Lucas die. He will tell you everything he saw, won't he, Zachary?
She smiled at the sandy-haired man. Zachary nodded. He stepped from around the chair and swept a low bow towards me. His lips were too thin for his face, his smile crooked. Yet the ice-green eyes stayed with me. I had seen that face before, but where? He strode to a small door. I hadn't seen it before. It was hidden in the flickering shadows of the torches, but still I should have noticed. I glanced at Nikolaos, and she nodded at me, a smile curving her lips. She had hidden the door from me without me knowing it. I tried to stand, pushing myself up with my hands. Mistake. I gasped and stood as quickly as I dared. The hands were already stiff with bruises and scrapes. If I lived until morning, I was going to be one sore puppy. Zachary opened the door with a flourish, like a magician drawing a curtain. A man stood in the door. He was dressed in the remains of a business suit. A slender figure, a little thick around the middle. Too many beers, too little exercise. He was maybe 30. "Come," Zachary said. The man moved out into the room. His eyes were round with fear. A pinky ring winked in the firelight. He stank of fear and death. He was still tanned, eyes still full. He could pass for human better than any vampire in the room, but he was more a corpse than any of them. It was just a matter of time. I raised the dead for a living. I knew a zombie when I saw one.
"Do you remember Nikolaos?" Zachary asked.
The zombie's human eyes grew large and the color drained from his face. Damn, he looked human.
"Yes. You will answer Nikolaos's questions, do you understand that?"
"I understand." His forehead wrinkled as if he were concentrating on something, something he couldn't quite remember.
"He would not answer our questions before, would you?" Nikolaos said.
The zombie shook its head, eyes staring at her with a sort of fearful fascination. Birds must look at snakes that way.
"We tortured him, but he was most stubborn. Then before we could continue our work, he hung himself. We really should have taken his belt away."
She sounded wistful, pouty. The zombie was staring at her.
"I hung myself. I don't understand. I..."
"He doesn't know?" I asked. Zachary smiled.
"No, he doesn't. Isn't it fabulous? You know how hard it is to make one so human that he forgets he has died?"
I knew. It meant somebody had a lot of power. Zachary was staring at the confused undead like he was a work of art. Precious.
"You raised him?" I asked.
Nikolaos said,
"Did you not recognize a fellow animator?"
She laughed, lightly, a breeze of far-off bells. I glanced at Zachary's face. He was staring at me, eyes memorizing me. Face blank, with a thread of something making the skin under one eye jump. Anger? Fear? Then he smiled at me, brilliant, echoing. Again there was that shock of recognition.
"Ask your question, Nikolaos. He has to answer now."
"Is that true?"
she asked me. I hesitated, surprised that she had turned to me.
"Yes."
"Who killed the vampire, Lucas?"
He stared at her, face crumbling. His breathing was shallow and too fast.
"Why doesn't he answer me?"
"The question is too complex," Zachary explained. "He may not remember who Lucas is."
"Then you ask him the questions, and I expect him to answer."
Her voice was warm with threat. Zachary turned with a flourish, spreading arms wide. "Ladies and gentlemen, behold, the undead." He grinned at his own joke. No one else even smiled. I didn't get it either.
"Did you see a vampire murdered?"
The zombie nodded.
"Yes."
"How was he murdered?"
"Heart torn out. Head cut off."
His voice was paper thin with fear.
"Who tore out his heart?"
The zombie started to shake his head over and over, quick, jerky movements.
"Don't know. Don't know."
"Ask him what killed the vampire," I said. Zachary shot me a look. His eyes were green glass. Bones stood out in his face. Rage sculpted him into a skeleton with canvas skin.
"This is my zombie! My business!"
"Zachary,"
Nikolaos said. He turned to her, movements stiff.
"It is a good question. A reasonable question."
Her voice was low, calm. No one was fooled. Hell must be full of voices like that. Deadly but oh so reasonable.
"Ask her question, Zachary."
He turned back to the zombie, hands balled into fists.
I didn't understand where the anger was coming from.
What killed the vampire?
Don't understand.
The voice held a knife's edge of panic. What sort of creature tore out the heart? Was it a human?
No.
Was it another vampire?
No.
This was why zombies still didn't do well in court. You had to lead them by the hand, so to speak, to get answers. Lawyers accused you of leading the witness, which was true, but it didn't mean the zombie was lying.
Then what killed the vampire?
Again, that head shaking back and forth, back and forth. He opened his mouth, but no sound came out. He seemed to be choking on the words, as if someone had stuffed paper down his throat.
Can't! What do you mean, can't?
Zachary screamed it at him and slapped him across the face. The zombie threw up its arms to cover its head.
You will answer me!
Each word was punctuated with a slap. The zombie fell to its knees and started to cry.
Can't! Answer me, damn you!
He kicked the zombie and it collapsed to the ground, rolling into a tight ball. Stop it! I walked towards them. Stop it! He kicked the zombie one last time and turned on me.
It's my zombie! I can do what I want with him!
That used to be a human being. It deserves more respect than this. I knelt by the crying zombie. I felt Zachary looming over me. Nikolaos said,
Leave her alone for now.
He stood there like an angry shadow pressing over my back. I touched the zombie's arm. It flinched.
It's all right. I'm not going to hurt you.
Not going to hurt you. He had killed himself to escape. But not even the grave was sanctuary enough. Before tonight, I would have said no animator would have raised the dead for such a purpose. Sometimes the world is a worse place than I want to know about. I had to peel the zombie's hands from his face, then turn the face up to stare at me. One look was enough. Dark eyes were incredibly wide. Fear. Such fear. A thin line of spittle oozed from his mouth. I shook my head and stood.
You've broken him.
Damn right. No damn zombie's gonna make a fool of me. He'll answer the questions. I whirled to stare at the man's angry eyes.
Don't you understand? You've broken his mind.
Zombies don't have minds.
That's right, they don't.
All they have, and for a very short time, is the memory of what they were. If you treat them well, they can retain their personalities for maybe a week, a little more, but this... I pointed at the zombie, then spoke to Nikolaos.
Ill treatment will speed the process. Shock will destroy it.
What are you saying, animator?
This sadist,
I jabbed a thumb at Zachary,
has destroyed the zombie's mind. It won't be answering any more questions. Not for anyone. Not ever.
Nikolaos turned like a pale storm. Her eyes were blue glass. Her words filled the room with a soft burning.
You arrogant.
A tremor ran through her body, from small, slippered feet to long, white, blonde hair. I waited for the wooden chair to catch fire and blaze from the fine heat of her anger. The anger stripped away the child puppet. Bones stood out against white paper skin. Hands grabbed at the air, clawed and straining. One hand dug into the arm of her chair. The wood whined, then cracked. The sound echoed against the stone walls. Her voice burned along our skin.
Get out of here before I kill you. Take the woman and see her safely back to her car. If you fail me again, large or small, I will tear your throat out, and my children will bathe in a shower of your blood.
Nicely graphic. A little melodramatic, but nicely graphic. I didn't say it out loud. Hell, I wasn't even breathing. Any movement might attract her. All she needed was an excuse. Zachary seemed to sense it as well. He bowed, eyes never leaving her face. Then without a word, he turned and began to walk towards the small door. His movements were unhurried, as if death wasn't staring holes in his back. He paused at the open door and made a motion as if to escort me through the door. I glanced at Jean-Claude, still standing where she had left him. I had not asked about Catherine's safety. There had been no opportunity. Things were happening too fast. I opened my mouth. Maybe Jean-Claude guessed. He silenced me with a wave of a slender, pale hand. The hand seemed as white as the lace on his shirt. His eye sockets were filled with blue flame. The long black hair floated around his suddenly death-pale face. His humanity was folding away. His power flared across my skin, raising the hairs on my arms. I hugged myself, staring at the creature that had been Jean-Claude. "Run!" He screamed it at me, voice slashing into me. I should have been bleeding from it. I hesitated and caught sight of Nikolaos. She was levitating ever so slowly upward. Milkweed hair danced around her skeleton head. She raised a clawed hand. Bones and veins were caught in the amber of her skin. Jean-Claude whirled, claw hand slashing out at me. Something slammed me into the wall and half out the door. Zachary caught my arm and pulled me through. I twisted free of him. The door thudded closed in my face. I whispered, "Sweet Jesus." Zachary was at the foot of a narrow stairway leading up. He held his hand out to me. His face was slick with sweat. "Please." He fluttered his hand at me like a trapped bird. A smell oozed from under the door. It was the smell of rotting corpses. The smell of bloated bodies, of skin cracked and ripening in the sun, of blood slowed and rotting in quiet veins. I gagged and backed away. "Oh, God," Zachary whispered. He put one hand over his mouth and nose, the other still held out to me. I ignored his hand but stood beside him on the stairs. He opened his mouth to say something, but the door creaked. The wood shook and hammered like a giant wind was beating against it. Wind whooshed from under the door. My hair streamed in a tornado wind. We backed up a few steps while the heavy wooden door fluttered and kicked against a wind that couldn't be there. A storm indoors? The sick smell of rotting flesh bled into the wind. We looked at each other. There was that moment of recognition of us against them. Or it. We turned and started running like we were attached by wires. There couldn't be a storm behind that door. There couldn't be a wind chasing us up the narrow stone stairs. There were no rotting corpses in that room. Or were there? God, I didn't want to know. I did not want to know.
Chapter 13. An explosion ripped up the stairs. The wind smashed us down like toys. The door had blown. I scrambled on all fours trying to get away, just get away. Zachary got to his feet, dragging me up by one arm. We ran. There was a howling from behind us, out of sight. The wind roared up behind us. My hair streamed over my face, blinding me. Zachary's hand grabbed mine and held on. The walls were smooth, the stairs slick stone. There was nothing to hold on to. We flattened ourselves against the stairs and hung on to each other.
"Anita,"
Jean-Claude's velvet voice whispered.
"Anita."
I thought to look up into the wind, blinking to see. There was nothing there.
"Anita."
The wind was calling my name.
"Anita."
Something glimmered, blue fire. Two points of blue flame hung on the wind. Eyes. Were those Jean-Claude's eyes? Was he dead? The blue flames began to float downward. The wind didn't touch them. I screamed, "Zachary!" But the sound was swallowed in the roar of the wind. Did he see it too, or was I going crazy? The blue flames came lower and lower, and suddenly I didn't want it to touch me. Just as suddenly I knew that was what it was going to do. Something told me that that would be a very bad thing. I tore loose from Zachary. He screamed something at me, but the wind roared and screeched between the narrow walls like a roller coaster gone mad. There was no other sound. I started to crawl up the stairs, wind beating against me, trying to crush me down. There was one other sound, Jean-Claude's voice in my head.
"Forgive me."
The blue lights were suddenly in front of my face. I flattened myself against a wall, hitting at the fire. My hands passed through the burning. It wasn't there. I screamed, "Leave me alone!" The fire melted through my hands like they weren't there, and into my eyes. The world was blue glass, silent, nothing, blue ice. A whisper,
"Run, run."
I was sitting on the stairs again, blinking into the wind. Zachary was staring at me. The wind stopped like someone had turned a switch. The silence was deafening. My breath was coming in short gasps. I had no pulse. I couldn't feel my heartbeat. All I could hear was my breathing, too loud, too shallow. I finally knew what they meant by breathless with fear. Zachary's voice was hoarse and too loud in the silence. I think he was whispering, but it came out like a shout. Your eyes! They glowed blue! I whispered, hush, shh. I didn't understand why, but someone must not hear what he had just said, must not know what had happened. My life depended on it. There was no more whispering in my head, but the last bit of advice had been good. Run. Running sounded very good. The silence was dangerous. It meant the fight was over, and the winner could turn its attention to other things. I did not want to be one of those things. I stood and offered a hand to Zachary. He looked puzzled but took it, standing. I pulled him up the steps and started running. I had to get away, had to, or I would die in this place tonight, now. I knew that with a surety that left no room for questions, no time for hesitation. I was running for my life. I would die if Nicolao saw me now. I would die, and I would never know why.
Either Zachary felt the panic too, or he thought I knew something he didn't, because he ran with me.
When one of us stumbled, the other pulled him or her to their feet, and we ran. We ran until acid burned the muscles in my legs, and my chest squeezed into a hard ache for lack of air. This was why I jogged, so I could run like hell when something was chasing me. Thinner thighs was not incentive enough, but this was, running when you had to, running for your life. The silence was heavy, almost touchable. It seemed to flow up the stairs as if searching for something. The silence chased us as surely as the wind had. The trouble with running upstairs, if you've ever had a knee injury, is that you can't do it forever. Give me a flat surface and I can run for hours. Put me on an incline and my knee gives me fits. It started as an ache, but it didn't take long to become a sharp, grinding pain. Each step began to scream up my leg until the entire leg pulsed with it. The knee began to pop as it moved, an audible sound. That was a bad sign. The knee was threatening to go out on me. If it popped out a joint, I'd be crippled here on the stairs with the silence breathing around me. Nicolaos would find me and kill me. Why was I so sure of that? No answer, but I knew it with every pull of air. I didn't argue with the feeling. I slowed and rested on the steps, stretching out the muscles in my leg, refusing to gasp as the muscles on my bad leg twitched. I would stretch it out and feel better. The pain wouldn't go away, I'd abused it too much for that, but I would be able to walk without the knee betraying me. Zachary collapsed on the stairs, obviously not a jogger. His muscles would tighten up if he didn't keep moving. Maybe he knew that, maybe he didn't care. I stretched my arms against the wall until my shoulders stretched out. Just something familiar to do while I waited for the knee to calm down. Something to do while I listened for... what? Something heavy and sliding. Something ancient, long dead. Sounds from above, higher up the stairs. I froze, pressed against the wall, palms flat against the cool stone. What now? What more? Surely to God it would be dawn soon. Zachary stood and turned to face up the stairs. I stood with my back to the wall so I could see up as well as down. I didn't want something sneaking up on me from below while I was looking upstairs. I wanted my gun. It was locked in my trunk where it was doing me a hell of a lot of good. We were standing just below a landing, a turn in the stairs. There have been times when I wished I could see around corners. This was one of them. The scrape of cloth against stone, the rub of shoes. The man who walked around the corner was human, surprise, surprise. His neck was even unmarked. Cotton-white hair was shaved close to his head. The muscles in his neck bulged. His biceps were bigger around than my waist. My waist is kinda small, but his arms were still, impressive. He was at least 6'3", and there wasn't enough fat on him to grease a cake pan. His eyes were the crystalline paleness of January skies, a distant, icy blue. He was also the first bodybuilder I'd ever seen who didn't have a tan. All that rippling muscle was done in white, like Moby Dick. A black mesh tank top showed off every inch of his massive chest. Black jogging shorts flared around the swell of his legs. He had had to cut them up the sides to slip them over the rock bulge of his thighs. I whispered,
"Jesus, how much do you bench press?"
He smiled, close-lipped. He spoke with the barest movement of lips, never giving a glimpse of his incisors.
400?
I gave a low whistle and said what he wanted me to say.
Impressive.
He smiled, careful not to show teeth. He was trying to play the vampire. Such a careful act being wasted on me. Should I tell him that he screamed human? Nah, he might break me over his thigh like kindling.
"This is Winter," Zachary said.
The name was too perfect to be real, like a 1940s movie star.
"What is happening?"
he asked.
"Our master and Jean-Claude are fighting," Zachary said.
He drew a deep, sighing breath. His eyes widened just a bit.
"Jean-Claude?"
He made it sound like a question. Zachary nodded and smiled.
"Yes, he's been holding out."
"Who are you?" he asked. I hesitated. Zachary shrugged.
"Anita Blake."
He smiled then, flashing nice normal teeth at last.
"You're the executioner?"
"Yes." He laughed. The sound echoed between the stone walls. The silence seemed to tighten around us. The laughter stopped abruptly, a dew of sweat on his lip. Winter felt it and feared it. His voice came low, almost a whisper, as if he was afraid of being overheard.
"You aren't big enough to be the executioner."
I shrugged. "It disappoints me too sometimes." He smiled, almost laughed again, but swallowed it. His eyes were shiny.
"Let's all get out of here," Zachary said.
I was with him.
"I was sent to check on Nikolaos," Winter said.
The silence pulsed with the name. A bead of sweat dripped down his face. Important safety tip. Never say the name of an angry master vampire when they are within hearing distance.
"She can take care of herself,"
Zachary whispered, but the sound echoed anyway.
"No," I said.
Zachary glared at me and I shrugged. "Sometimes I just can't help myself." Winter stared at me, face as impersonal as carved marble. Only his eyes trembled. Mr. Macho.
"Come," he said.
He turned without waiting to see if we would follow. We followed. I would have followed him anywhere as long as he went upstairs. All I knew was that nothing, absolutely nothing, could get me back down those stairs. Not willingly. Of course, there are always other options. I glanced up at Winter's broad back. Yeah, if you don't want to do it willingly, there are always other options.
Chapter 14. The stairs opened into a square chamber. An electric bulb dangled from the ceiling. I had never thought one dim electric light could be beautiful, but it was. A sign that we were leaving the underground chamber of horrors behind and approaching the real world. I was ready to go home. There were two doors leading out of the stone room, one straight ahead and one to the right. Music floated through the one in front of us. High, bright circus music. The door opened, and the music boiled around us. There was a glimpse of bright colors and hundreds of people milling about. A sign flashed, "Funhouse." A carnival midway, inside a building. I knew where I was. Circus of the Damned. The city's most powerful vampire slept under the circus. It was something to remember. The door started to shut, dimming the music, cutting off the bright signs. I looked into the eyes of a teenage girl who was straining to see around the doorway. The door clicked shut. A man leaned against the door. He was tall and slender, dressed like a riverboat gambler. Royal purple coat, lace at the neck and down the front, straight black pants and boots. A straight-brimmed hat shaded his face, and a gold mask covered everything but his mouth and chin. Dark eyes stared at me through the gold mask. His tongue danced over his lips and teeth. Fangs, a vampire. Why didn't that surprise me?
"I was afraid I would miss you, executioner."
His voice had a southern thickness. Winter moved to stand between us. The vampire laughed, a rich, barking sound.
The muscle man here thinks he can protect you. Shall I tear him to pieces to prove him wrong?
That won't be necessary, I said. Zachary moved up to stand beside me.
Do you recognize my voice? The vampire asked.
I shook my head.
It has been 2 years. I didn't know until this business came up that you were the executioner. I thought you died.
Can we cut to the chase here? Who are you and what do you want?
So eager. So impatient. So human.
He raised gloved hands and took off his hat. Short auburn hair framed the gold mask. Please don't do this, Zachary said. The master has ordered me to see the woman safely to her car.
I don't intend to harm a hair on her head tonight.
The gloves lifted the mask away. The left side of the face was scarred, pitted, melted away. Only his brown eye was still whole and alive, rolling in a circle of pinkish-white scar tissue. Acid burns look like that. Except it hadn't been acid. It had been holy water. I remembered his body pinning me to the ground, his teeth tearing at my arm while I tried to keep him off my throat. The clean, sharp snap of bone where he bit through, my screams, his hand forcing my head back, him rearing to strike, helpless. He missed the neck. I never knew why. Teeth sank around my collarbone, snapped it. He lapped up my blood like a cat with cream. I lay under his weight, listening to him lap up my blood. The broken bones didn't hurt yet. Shock. I was beginning not to hurt, not to be afraid. I was beginning to die. My right hand reached out in the grass and touched something smooth. Glass. A vial of holy water that had been thrown out of my bag, scattered by the half-human servants. The vampire never looked at me. His face was pressed over the wound. His tongue was exploring the hole he'd made. His teeth grated along the naked bone and I screamed. He laughed into my shoulder, laughed while he killed me. I flicked the lid open on the vial and splashed his face. Flesh boiled. His skin popped and bubbled. He knelt over me, clutching his face and shrieking. I thought he had been trapped in the house when it burned down. I had wanted him dead, wished him dead. I had wished that memory away, pushed it back. Now here he stood, my favorite nightmare come to life.
What? No scream of horror? No gasp of fright? You disappoint me, executioner. Don't you admire your own handiwork?
My voice came out strangled, hushed.
I thought you died. Now you know different. And now I know you're alive, too. How cozy.
He smiled, and the muscles on his scarred cheek pulled the smile to one side, making it a grimace. Even vampires can't heal everything.
Eternity, executioner. Eternity like this.
He caressed the scars with a gloved hand.
What do you want? Be brave, little girl. Be brave as you want to be. I can feel your fear. I want to see the scars I gave you. See that you remember me like I remember you.
I remember you.
Scars, girl. Show me the scars.
I show you the scars, then what?
Then you go home. Or wherever you're going. The master has given strict orders you are not to be harmed until after you do your job for us.
Then? He smiled, a broad glistening expanse of teeth.
Then I hunt you down, and I pay you back for this.
He touched his face.
Come, girl, don't be shy. I've seen it all before. I tasted your blood. Show me the scars, and the muscle man won't have to die proving how strong he is.
I glanced at Winter. Massive fists were crossed over his chest. His spine nearly vibrated with readiness. The vampire was right. Winter would die trying. I pushed the ripped sleeve above the elbow. A mound of scar tissue decorated the bend in my arm. Scars dribbled down from it like liquid, crisscrossing and flowing down the outer edge of my arm. The cross-shaped burn took up the only clear space on the inside of my forearm.
I didn't think you'd ever use that arm again, after the way I tore into it.
Physical therapy is a wonderful thing.
Ain't no physical therapy gonna help me.
No, I said. The first button was missing on my blouse. One more and I spread my shirt back to expose the collarbone. Scars ridged it, crawled over it. It looked real attractive in a bathing suit.
Good, the vampire said. You smell like cold sweat when you think of me, little girl. I was hoping I haunted you the way you haunted me.
There is a difference, you know.
And what might that be?
You were trying to kill me.
I was defending myself.
And why had you come to our house?
To put stakes through our hearts. You came to our house to kill us. We didn't go hunting for you.
But you did go hunting for 23 other people. That's a lot of people. Your group had to be stopped.
Who appointed you God? Who made you our executioner?
I took a deep breath. It was steady, didn't tremble. Brownie point for me.
The police.
Bah! He spit on the floor. Very appealing.
You work real hard, girl. You find the murderer, then we'll finish up.
May I go now?
By all means.
You're safe tonight because the master says so, but that will change. Zachary said, out the side door. He walked nearly backwards watching the vampire as we moved away.
Winter stayed behind, guarding our backs.
Idiot. Zachary opened the door. The night was hot and sticky. Summer wind slapped against my face, humid and close and beautiful. The vampire called,
"Remember the name Valentine, 'cause you'll be hearing from me."
Zachary and I walked out the door. It clanged shut behind us. There was no handle on the outside, no way to open it. A one-way ticket out. Out sounded just fine. We started to walk.
"You got a gun with silver bullets in it?" he asked.
"Yes."
"I'd start carrying it if I were you."
"Silver bullets won't kill him."
"But it'll slow him down."
"Yeah." We walked for a few minutes in silence. The warm summer night seemed to slide around us, hold us in sticky, curious hands.
"What I need is a shotgun."
He looked at me.
"You going to carry a shotgun with you day after day?"
"Sawed off, it would fit under a coat."
"In the middle of a Missouri summer, you'd melt. Why not a machine gun or a flamethrower while you're at it?"
"Machine gun has too wide a spread range. You may hit innocent people. Flamethrower's bulky. Messy, too." He stopped me with a hand on my shoulder.
"You've used a flamethrower on vampires before?"
"No, but I saw it used."
"My God."
He stared off into space for a moment, then asked,
"Did it work?"
"Like a charm. Messy, though. And it burned the house down around us. I thought it was a little extreme."
"I'll bet."
We started walking again.
"You must hate vampires."
"I don't hate them."
"Then why do you kill them?"
"Because it's my job and I'm good at it." We turned a corner and I could see the parking lot where I had left my car. It seemed like I had parked my car days ago. My watch said hours. It was a little like jet lag, but instead of crossing time zones, you crossed events. So many traumatic events and your time sense screws up. Too much happening in too short a space of time.
"I'm your daytime contact. If you need anything or want to give a message, here's my number."
He shoved a matchbook into my hand. I glanced at the matchbook. It read, "Circus of the Damned," bleeding red onto a shiny black background. I shoved it in my jeans pocket. My gun was lying there in my trunk. I slipped into the shoulder rig, not caring that I had no jacket to cover it. A gun out in plain sight attracts attention, but most people leave you alone. They often even start running, clearing a path before you. It made chases very convenient. Zachary waited until I was sitting in my car. He leaned into the open door.
"It can't just be a job, Anita. There's gotta be a better reason than that."
I glanced down at my lap and started the car. I looked up into his pale eyes.
"I'm afraid of them."
"It is a very natural human trait to destroy that which frightens us."
"Most people spend their lives avoiding things they fear. You run after them. That's crazy."
He had a point. I closed the door and left him standing in the hot dark. I raised the dead and laid the undead to rest. It was what I did. Who I was. If I ever started questioning my motives, I would stop killing vampires. Simple as that. I wasn't questioning my motives tonight, so I was still a vampire slayer. Still the name they had given me. I was the executioner. Chapter 15. Dawn slid across the sky like a curtain of light. The morning star glittered like a diamond chip against the easy flow of light. I had seen 2 sunrises in as many days. I was beginning to feel grumpy. The trick would be to decide whom to be grumpy at and what to do about it. Right now, all I wanted was to sleep. The rest could wait, would have to wait. I had been running on fear, adrenaline, and stubbornness for hours. In the quiet hush of the car, I could feel my body. It was not happy. It hurt to grip the wheel, hurt to turn it. The bloody scrapes on my hands looked a lot worse than they were, I hoped. My whole body felt stiff. Everybody underrates bruises. They hurt. They would hurt a lot more after I slept on them. There is nothing like waking up the morning after a good beating. It's like a hangover that covers your entire body. The corridor of my apartment building was hushed. The whir of the air conditioner breathed in the silence. I could almost feel all the people asleep behind the doors. I had an urge to press my ear to one of the doors and see if I could hear my neighbors breathing. So quiet. The hour after dawn is the most private of all. It is a time to be alone and enjoy the silence. The only hour more hushed is 3 a.m., and I am not a fan of 3 a.m. I had my keys in my hand, had almost touched the door, when I realized it was ajar. A tiny crack, almost closed, but not. I moved to the right of the door and pressed my back against the wall. Had they heard the keys jingling? Who was inside? Adrenaline was flowing like fine champagne. I was alert to every shadow, the way the light fell. My body was in emergency mode, and I hoped to God I didn't need it. I drew my gun and leaned against the wall. Now what? There was no sound from inside the apartment, nothing. It could be more vampires, but it was nearly true dawn. It wouldn't be vampires. Who else would break into my apartment? I took a deep breath and let it out. I didn't know. Didn't have the faintest idea. You'd think I'd get used to not knowing what the hell is going on, but I never do. It just makes me grumpy and a little scared. I had several choices. I could leave and call the police, not a bad choice. But what could they do that I couldn't, except walk in and get killed in my place? That was unacceptable. I could wait in the corridor until whoever it was got curious. That could take a while, and the apartment might be empty. I'd feel pretty stupid standing out here for hours, gun trained on an empty apartment. I was tired, and I wanted to go to bed. Damn it. I could always just go in, gun blazing. No. I could push the door open and be lying on the floor and shoot anyone inside. If they had a gun. If there was anyone inside. The smart thing would be to outwait them, but I was tired. The adrenaline rush was fading under the frustration of too many choices. There comes a point when you just get tired. I didn't think I could stand out here in the air-conditioned silence and stay alert. I wouldn't fall asleep standing up, but it was a thought. And another hour would see my neighbors up and about, maybe caught in the crossfire. Unacceptable. Whatever was going to happen needed to happen now. Decision made. Good. Nothing like fear to wash your mind clean. I moved as far from the door as I could and crossed over, gun trained on the door. I moved along the left-hand wall toward the hinge side of the door. It opened in. Just give it a push flat against the wall. Simple. Right. I crouched down on one knee, my shoulders hunched as if I could draw my head down like a turtle. I was betting that any gun would hit above me, chest high. Crouched down, I was a lot shorter than chest high. I shoved the door open with my left hand and hugged the door sill. It worked like a charm. My gun was pointing at the bad guy's chest. Except his hands were already in the air, and he was smiling at me. "Don't shoot," he said. "It's Edward." I knelt there staring at him. Anger rose like a warm tide. "You bastard! You knew I was out here." He steepled his fingers. "I heard the keys." I stood, eyes searching the room. Edward had moved my white overstuffed chair to face the door. Nothing else seemed to be moved. I assure you, Anita, I am quite alone. That I believe. Why didn't you call out to me?
I wanted to see if you were still good. I could have blown you away when you hesitated in front of the door, with your keys jingling so nicely.
I shut the door behind me and locked it. Though truthfully, with Edward inside, I might have been safer locking myself out rather than in. He was not an imposing man, not frightening if you didn't know him. He was 5'8", slender, blonde, blue-eyed, charming. But if I was the executioner, he was death itself. He was the person I had seen use a flamethrower. I had worked with him before, and heaven knows you felt safe with him. He carried more firepower than Rambo, but he was a little too careless of innocent bystanders. He began life as a hitman. That much the police knew. I think humans became too easy, so he switched to vampires and lycanthropes. And I knew that if a time came where it was more expedient to kill me than to be my friend, he would do it. Edward had no conscience. It made him the perfect killer. I've been up all bloody night, Edward. I'm not in the mood for your games. How hurt are you? I shrugged and winced. The hands are sore, bruises mostly. I'm all right. Your night secretary said you were out at a bachelorette party. He grinned at me, eyes sparkling. Must have been some party. I ran into a vampire you might know. He raised his yellow eyebrows and made a silent O with his lips. Remember the house you nearly roasted down around us? About 2 years ago. We killed 6 vampires and 2 human servants. I walked past him and flopped onto the couch. We missed one. No, we didn't. His voice was very precise. Edward at his most dangerous. I looked at the carefully cut back of his head. Trust me on this one, Edward. He damn near killed me tonight. Which was a partial truth, also known as a lie. If the vampires didn't want me to tell the police, they certainly didn't want death to know. Edward was a whole lot more dangerous to them than the police. What one? The one who nearly tore me to pieces. He calls himself Valentine. He's still wearing the acid scars I gave him. Holy water? Yeah. Edward came to sit beside me on the couch. He kept to one end, a careful distance. Tell me. His eyes were intense on my face. I looked away. There isn't much left to tell. You're lying, Anita. Why? I stared at him, anger coming in a rush. I hate to be caught in a lie. There have been some vampires murdered down along the river. How long have you been in town, Edward? He smiled then, though at what I wasn't sure. Not long. I heard a rumor that you got to meet the city's head vampire tonight. I couldn't stop it. My mouth fell open. The surprise was too much to hide. How the hell do you know that? He gave a graceful shrug. I have my sources. No vampire would talk to you, not willingly. Again, that shrug that said everything and nothing at all. What have you done tonight, Edward? What have you done tonight, Anita? Touché, Mexican standoff, whatever. Why have you come to me, then? What do you want? I want the location of the master vampire. The daytime resting place. I had recovered enough so that my face was bland. No surprise here. How would I know that? Do you know? No. I stood up. I'm tired and I want to go to bed. If there's nothing else... He stood too, still smiling, like he knew I had lied. I'll be in touch. If you do happen to run across the information I need... He let the sentence trail off and started for the door. Edward? He half turned to me. Do you have a sawed-off shotgun? His eyebrows went up again. I could get one for you. I'd pay. No, a gift. I can't tell you. But you do know? Edward, how deep are you in, Anita? Eye level and sinking fast. I could help you. I know. Would helping you allow me to kill more vampires? Maybe. He grinned at me, brilliant, heart-stopping. The grin was his very best harmless, good old boy smile. I could never decide whether the smile was real or just another mask. Would the real Edward please stand up? Probably not. I enjoy hunting vampires. Let me in on it if you can. I will. He paused with a hand on the doorknob. I hope I have more luck with my other sources than I did with you. What happens if you can't find the location from someone else?
Why, I come back.
And?
And you will tell me what I want to know, won't you?
He was still grinning at me, charming, boyish. He was also talking about torturing me if he had to. I swallowed hard. Give me a few days, Edward, and I might have your information.
Good. I'll bring the shotgun later today. If you're not home, I'll leave it on the kitchen table.
I didn't ask how he'd get inside if I wasn't home. He would only have smiled or laughed. Locks weren't much of a deterrent to Edward.
Thank you. For the shotgun, I mean.
My pleasure, Anita. Until tomorrow. He stepped out the door, and it closed behind him. Great. Vampires, now Edward. The day was about 15 minutes old. Not a very promising beginning. I locked the door, for what good it would do me, and went to bed. The Browning High Power was in its second home, a modified holster strapped to the headboard of my bed. My spare crucifix was cool metal around my neck. I was as safe as I was going to be, and almost too tired to care. I took one more thing to bed with me, a stuffed toy penguin named Sigmund. I don't sleep with him often, just every once in a while after someone tries to kill me. Everyone has their weaknesses. Some people smoke. I collect stuffed penguins. If you won't tell, I won't.
Chapter 16. I stood in the huge stone room where Nikolaos had sat. Only the wooden chair remained, empty, alone. A coffin sat on the floor to one side. Torchlight gleamed off the polished wood. A breeze eased through the room. The torches wavered and threw huge black shadows on the walls. The shadows seemed to move independent of the light. The longer I looked at them, the more I was sure the shadows were too dark, too thick. I could taste my heart in my throat. My pulse was hammering in my head. I couldn't breathe. Then I realized I was hearing a second heartbeat, like an echo.
Jean-Claude?
The shadows cried.
Jean-Claude?
In high, whining voices. I knelt by the coffin and gripped the lid. It was all one piece and raised on smooth, oiled hinges. Blood poured down the sides of the coffin. The blood poured over my legs, splashed on my arms. I screamed and stood, covered in blood. It was still warm.
Jean-Claude!
A pale hand raised out of the blood, spasmed and collapsed against the side of the coffin. Jean-Claude's face floated to the top. My hand was reaching out. His heart was fluttering in my head, but he was dead. He was dead. His hand was icy wax. His eyes flew open. The dead hand grabbed my wrist.
No!
I tried to pull my hand free. I went down on my knees in the cooling blood and screamed,
"Let me go!"
He sat up. He was covered in blood. The white shirt dripped with it like a bloody rag.
No!
He pulled my arm closer to him and pulled me with it. I braced one hand on the coffin. I would not go to him. I would not go. He bent over my arm, mouth wide, fangs reaching. His heart beat against the shadows like thunder.
Jean-Claude! No!
He looked up at me just before he struck.
I had no choice.
Blood began to drip down his face from his hair, until his face was a bloody mask. Fangs sank into my arm. I screamed and woke sitting straight up in bed. The doorbell was buzzing. I scrambled out of bed, forgetting. I gasped. I'd moved too fast for the beating I'd had last night. I ached all over in places I couldn't possibly be bruised. My hands were stiff with dried blood. They felt arthritic. The doorbell was buzzing continuously as if someone was leaning against it. Whoever it was going to get a hug for waking me up. I was sleeping in an oversized shirt. Pulling last night's jeans on was my version of a robe. I put Sigmund the stuffed penguin back with all the rest. The stuffed toys sat on a small love seat against the far wall under the window. Penguins lined the floor around it like a plump, fuzzy tide. It hurt to move. It even felt tight when I breathed. I yelled, "I'm coming!" It occurred to me halfway to the door that it might be someone unfriendly. I padded back into the bedroom and got my gun.
My hand felt stiff and awkward around it. I should have cleaned and bandaged the hands last night. Oh well. I knelt behind the chair Edward had moved in front of the door and called. Who is it?
It's Ronnie, Anita. We're supposed to work out this morning.
It was Saturday. I had forgotten. It was always amazing how ordinary life was, even while people were trying to hurt you. I felt like Ronnie should know about last night. Something so extraordinary should touch all my life, but it didn't work that way. When I'd been in the hospital with my arm in traction and tubes running all through me,